Hey y'all, this is your host, Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast, season 2. I hope the stories inspire you to switch careers. I have done all kinds of interesting things in my life, and I'm a firm believer if you only live once. Sit back and enjoy.
We are Switch into Tech. Tech resources to accelerate your career in information technology. Monthly classes on tech topics. We offer free or discounted exam vouchers, scholarships, free Udemy courses, free events, free boot camps, and more. You can find us at www.switchintotech.org.
Okay. Hey, y'all. This is Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. Today, I have Cedric Sidnor with me today, and he's going to talk more about himself and his career switches and whatever else we get into. Go ahead, Cedric.
Hi, my name is Cedric Sidnor, and I am originally from Cleveland. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm originally from Sandusky, and I am one of 13 children. My mom and dad moved us via Greyhound in 1977 from Sandusky, Ohio, to Sacramento. My mom had a job with then Governor Jerry Brown. And I was raised here, and I went to school here, and I wanted to join the military. I wanted to, you know, go to the Navy, but I wanted to go and learn about computers. So they promised me that I can join the Navy and go into computers, and I signed up, and they gave me my assignment, which wasn't computers. I had to fix airplanes. I was a hydraulics man, fixing the hydraulics parts of airplanes. And I wasn't happy about that, but I did learn a trade. It also is where I learned how to enjoy going to school and getting good grades, because I was just a difficult student in high school. I didn't take school seriously. And when I went to the military, they're about learning. And I learned about airplanes, and I learned about the hydraulics part of airplanes, and it made me fall in love with learning. That was the first part of my career. I was stationed in Hawaii, and circumstances led to where I didn't have a second stint with the Navy. And so I wanted to become a lawyer. So I came back to Sacramento, and I was just maybe like on the brink of becoming a lawyer. I took the test and passed, and then the O.J. Simpson trial happened, and that changed my mind about becoming a lawyer, because I used to always tell people I wanted to be the world's first ethical lawyer, and that's almost like an oxymoron to you know. And so I decided that at the time I was coaching basketball, and I ended up becoming a teacher. And I taught a leadership class and history class at Luther Burbank High School, which is here in Sacramento. And I loved that so much, I stayed with it. The money wasn't good, but it was one of the most wealthiest jobs I've ever had, because I learned so much about people. I always wanted to write a book. I always wanted to write a book, especially a book about the Bible, a book about religion, because my mom, Ida Sidnor, who used to be the president of the NACP here in Sacramento, she used to teach classes on Revelations and the end time. And she would make us go. She would make us go, and I'm glad she did. And I learned a lot. And so I always said I wanted to write a book. I always wanted to write a book. So then I started reading the Left Behind series by Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye, and I fell in love with those books. But one of the things that were missing out of those books is they talk about characters. None of them look like me or you. Like, what happens in the rapture to black Black people? What happened to Mexican people? What happened to Asian people? Is it just the white experience? You know, the rapture experience is just a white experience. So I told myself I wanted to write a book on that. And I did. And that was my third and my final career change. And I'm loving it. I'm loving writing. And I'm loving the processes that go with writing. So that's me.
That's interesting. I went to Smedberg and Sheldon. I'm trying to think. Shoot, that was, oh my God, it's 20 years ago this
year. You're a baby.
20 years ago this year.
Wow.
But yeah, and actually no, it would be 20 years as of January because I graduated high school a semester early, even though I was like you. I didn't really care about school because I did. It was too slow. Like I learned when I went to Guatemala to learn Spanish because in Mexico, it's too expensive there. So I went to Guatemala and I had a private teacher and I did a homestay with the family. And I learned that I need to go at my own pace. And that's why I hated school so much is because they were too damn slow for me. You know, and I need to ask questions on my own, you know, to dig deeper into things. So it took me like 30 years to figure that out. Like but that's what I learned 30 years later about school. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I always wanted to be a lawyer. I always wanted to be a lawyer because I liked arguing. And I'm a very analytical, very logical person. And I just wanted to help people that needed help, you know. And I was set on that. I was never one of the kids who wanted to be an astronaut. I played sports. I played basketball, ran track, was very good at it. Never wanted to be an athlete. I just wanted to be a lawyer. When I went into the military, like I said earlier, the plan to go to be become to go into the law field required that I go to get a commission, which means I would have to go to Annapolis. I would have to go to a different type of military experience than I wanted. I wanted to just be an enlisted person, not a commissioned person. So I ditched that plan and decided I want to just, you know, work on computers. I take computers apart and put them back together again. So, yeah, I wanted to always become a lawyer. In a way, Elise, I feel like I still am a lawyer because I'm now pleading the case for a different type of, or I'm mitigating sort of for God. I'm mitigating for people like us with their walk with God and their spirituality. And in a way, I feel like I'm that already. Like people often say, are you a minister? And I'm never the one with titles. I don't like titles. I always said that Peter is Peter, John is John, Jesus is Jesus, and I got to call you Reverend what? You know, like they didn't take on titles. So, you know, why should I just, and nor am I putting people down. I teach my kids to always say doctor and reverend, but if I would never require someone to call me that. So I've always felt like I was sort of like defending people like me and defending the truth as it's supposed to have been like portrayed to us coming from God. So I guess I still am a lawyer.
My mother wanted to be a lawyer and I talked her out of it. I got some book called like 50 Reasons Not to Go to Law School or something like that. And she read it and she was like, oh, hell no, I'm not going to law school. So, I mean, because my mother, like, she would have been like the female Johnny Cochran. Like, my mother had the gift of gab and, you know, she loved to write and to research. And she was always in some law stuff anyway, like fighting all these cases. It was just a mess. And My mother was, I don't want to say just a clerk, but she t retired from the state of California as a clerk,
Oh,
a
wow.
statistical clerk. But yeah, no, she would have been like the Johnny next female Johnny Cochran, like seriously. Let's see, what was the, whew, excuse me, my allergies is kind of up there. This weather keep flip-flopping. What was the catalyst that made you change your career? I don't know if you talked about why you didn't stay in the military and, you became a teacher.
Well, if I told you the story why I didn't tell him to stay in the military, it would be more like a reality drama. To be honest. I mean, if you want to hear it, I'll share it with you.
I've worked on a military base before. I probably fully, totally understand, and I've worked at a VA hospital too.
Well, mine's just a little bit more melodramatic and dealt with relationships. Well, I'll just try to briefly share the story with you. I felt my high school sweetheart fell in love with her. She convinced me, along with the fact that my father was in the Navy, she kind of convinced me, yeah, you want to do that? That'll be the path that we take. That'll be the path we take. And I went in because I wanted to start a family with her. And long story short, she ripped my heart in two. I ended up, it was a situation to where I was completely trusting her in Hawaii. And she decided to kind of move on back in Sacramento. And that had me leaving Hawaii unauthorized to come back to Sacramento to try to patch things up with her. I married her, try to patch things up. And so I ended up being kicked out of the Navy for with a bad conduct discharge for not going to work. I just didn't go back to Hawaii. And I got in trouble for that. So that was more of a forced career change, to be honest with you. The career change from co teaching and coaching to writing was more because of retirement. My body is tired, and I just wanted to continue to try to voice some of the things that I think that are important. So I switched over to becoming a writer.
So, was there like a period of time where you were kind of like floating between the military and being a teacher, or did you just go right into
Yes,
teaching?
yes, yes. And it's some things that you maybe at a later time, there's some things that you said in some of the interviews where people were interviewing you that I thought was very interesting and so true. But like the floating period, yes, that was there was a time where I was just a nomad. I was just, what do I do? What do I do? Because my entire life was building the family. And now I have no family, I have no wife. I have no career. What do I do? And the only thing I can think of, at least, was I'll just go to school. I like going to school. So I enrolled in Cosumnes River College and ended up becoming the president of the student body at Cosumnes River College. I was carrying, you're only supposed to take 12 units. I had 27 units, which had to get signed off by the dean. And this is sort of how me and you kind of cross. I was a geek. I had an astronomy class where I was in the morning, but because I wanted to ace the class, I would go to the evening class so I'll have it all packed. I didn't want ace. I wanted, if there was 1,000 points, I wanted all 100, all 1,000 points. I didn't want to miss one. And so I got straight A's, straight A's, straight A's all throughout, which helped me become the student body president. And my friend, I aced a few classes, but if you try to ace a class, the worst that can happen is you get an A. If you try to get straight A's, the worst that can happen is a B. So in one of my classes that I wasn't acing it, and again, acing means you get 100% of the points, Spanish. And Spanish like math, you have to practice every single day. You can't just, you know, think you're going to wing it. So I was in the low 90s and I wanted to make sure that I kept my 4.0 GPA. So my friend's wife tutored me and I ended up getting a B. And once you get a B, the B's start flowing. They come, and I ended up getting maybe two or three B's in my college career because of that. So, yeah, and what I did to fill that low was go to school. I went to school, learned as much as I can, and got a degree in history. And I love history because it was like watching the movie that happened already. And, of course, because I believe in the Bible, that's a history of itself. So I studied a lot of the Bible, and that kind of helped me with what I'm doing right now.
That's funny when you say you're a geek, because I consider myself to be a geek, but I'm on the thing of C's get degrees. That's my whole.
That's right. That is so. This is what I told my friend. I gotta say this, my friend who was going to school to become a doctor, and she was upset because she got a B. And then that B went down and she was about to get a C to pass a class. I'm like, well, explain to me, what do you call a doctor that got straight A's in school? She said, doctor. I said, what do you call a doctor that got A's, B's, and C's? She said, doctor. I'm like, exactly. That's as long as you pass, that's the point, you know? No one looks at a person's degree and say, that's a straight A's doctor. That's an A and B doctor. That's an A and B, and she got one C doctor. It's just you did what you had to do, and now you have the degree. So,
yeah, because like I said, I'm more of like the independent study type of person, you know, because a lot of stuff they have in school is some fluff anyway. Get me down to the nitty gritty and the juicy stuff, the stuff that I can apply to real life, you know.
Amen. Yep.
So, you know, I don't really care about all that other stuff. But, you know, I barely graduated high school. I barely graduated college. But look at me now.
Look at you now.
Let's see. You kind of talked about a little bit, all these things come at a cost. You know, when you wanted to become a teacher and you left the military. I mean, let me back it up. When you left the military, you know, to go chase your boo, did you have people in your ear saying, don't do it, don't do it? And then when you wanted to become a teacher, were people like, yeah, you crazy? And then now that you're a writer and, you know, the Bible is a big, you know, controversial topic, you know, people in your ear.
It is. Yes. There were people that were telling me, look right in front of you. You're a logical person. She doesn't care about you. She does not care. But I believed in love. I believed in love, and I believe in the fairy tale version of it. Because I was taught to love by this person. So I believed in her. My mom was one of them. My sister, I have a sister who's sort of like my mom. She was like, twin, leave her alone. She's the devil. Leave her alone. She's the devil. You know, don't pursue that. And it's weird because I wish I had listened earlier to the advice. I end up taking the advice, but sometimes that advice, when you don't heed to it, comes with another price that you end up paying. Now, as far as becoming a teacher, everyone, I end up getting remarried and I have three daughters. And they see how smart their father is. And their thing is, you can do so much with your brain. Why would you become a coach and a teacher? Why? You're getting paid peanuts. And that created tension in my relationship with my daughters because I spoiled them growing up. As long as they got good grades, they got all the finer things in life. And that kind of put a strain on our relationship because they wanted the father to be as prestigious as the way that he thinks and the way he talks and the way that he feels. But I've never been one to chase after materials or anything like that. But I, for some reason, that's sort of how I raised my kids, to like the finer things in life, because I got them the finer things in life. So that strained our relationship, that on the second one. Now, I'm still new in the, I think it's 2 years now that I've been writing. And the cost that I can say that writing has is, or being becoming an author, is you see so clearly your vision, but because you're dealing with other people's perspective, you can't expect them to see as clearly as what you see. And that's a lesson that I'm learning over again. Like Cedric, they're not going to see it exactly the way you do. Understand it, because you don't see exactly what they see. And I'm learning to not expect people, because expectations sometimes can ruin relationships, and not expect them to see things the way I do, especially when it comes up to Bible translations. And I've lost a couple connections, not relationship, but just connections from my view on the Bible, because it's a little different than the mainstream view. And when I started writing, I'm more about like reading the Bible and studying the Bible and learning the Bible. And that's the cost. I end up losing some connections because how I feel kind of set me apart from mainstream. And I've never been one to just go by tradition or just go by just because someone tell you something, that's the way it's supposed to be. No, that has to be proven. It has to be proven.
You touched on a lot, because, you know, like I said, my mother could have been the next Johnny Cochran, but I never really judged my mother for it or anything like that. Because I understand now that she had a family, you know, she couldn't go back to law school. You know, they didn't have all this online stuff that they have now.
Right.
You're going to find right. time to do it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when your daughters get older, you know, maybe they'll get it. Like I do. But and then outside of that, the different perspectives. I mean, one thing, you know, I found out is that people come and go, you know, when you start to make certain changes and things like that, and they can't stay around. So it's just your next journey in life, and it is what it is. But good stuff right there. Let's see. The process on switching careers. You kind of talked about it a little bit. I mean, of course, you have to go to college to be a teacher. I mean, maybe talk about, you know, your student teaching, the credentialing. You know, how did you convince someone to, oh, I'm going for, well, they probably have programs now, but I don't know if they did back then, but the military to teaching programs, you know, convince someone, hey, you know, I'm not going to go back to the military, you know, I want to be a teacher now, you know, that going from airplanes to teaching. That's you know, a whole different thing. So what was your process? And, you know, you could have done any career. Why teaching instead of accounting or engineering or, you know, whatever?
Well, I think it goes along with who I am as a person and my personality, and who I was raised to be. Like I told you before, I have an identical twin brother, and he's the exact opposite of me. He is very, very good in math. Very, very good in math. And he, in so many cases, he's like a better, smarter, funnier, stronger version of me. And I've learned a lot from him. But on the flip side, there's some strengths that I have that he didn't have. The reason why I say that is we ended up, both my twin brother and I, kind of raising our nephews and nieces. And when I started raising my niece and my nephews, it came at an opportunity cost. And that opportunity cost was like me being able to give my second wife the attention that I should give her, because now I'm raising someone else's kids. And then the same with my daughters. All of those things, however, got me prepared to teach at Luther Burbank High School. Now, I would say it got me prepared to teach at school, but Luther Burbank High School, which is in the middle of South Sacramento, and it's an inner city school, I don't need to tell you about it. The dynamic of that demographic is like no other school. And I came already cookie cutter prepared to teach those students. I started out first with coaching, and then I ran programs over the summer. And then the principal at the time came up to me and said, "Well, you have a degree. Why don't you just teach? Why don't you just teach?" And we started off with the leadership class and then ended up going to government class. And let me just give you an example of the kids that I deal with and my philosophies. And this is only because I have 70 something nephews and nieces that I helped raise. One of the kids, when I started my class, we had an overflow of 37 kids. We were only supposed to have 25, but everybody wanted to go to Coach Cedric's class. So we had 37 kids. And with classroom comes the jokesters, the ones who want to prove themselves. And I had this kid, every time I would say something, he would make a joke about it. He would make a joke about it. And I'm the type, I'll stop the entire class. So I stopped the entire class. And I said to him, "It's obvious that you have something that you want to say. You want to be a comedian." And he's like, yeah. I'm like, "Well, how about this? Come up to the front of the class. You can have 5 minutes to say whatever you want. Just don't talk about somebody's mama and just don't cuss. And you'll be fine." He's like, okay. At least he came up to the front and he said some gibberish for about maybe 5 seconds. And he stood there frozen. He couldn't do anything. So I had him go back to his seat and I said, "See, people like you, you get your energy off of mocking other people. You get your kicks, and that's how your drive off of being able to heckle the person that's in charge." I'm like, "That's who you really are. You're not a comedian. That's who you really are." At least that kid never said anything the rest of the semester. He went on, he transferred to another school. He transferred over to Sheldon. He became a football sensation and he's a professional right now. And I say that to say that no curriculum can cover that. No curriculum can do things like that. And this is the curriculum, and I'm one for who I will follow the curriculum. But sometimes when they tell you that you have to do this and you have to do that, it doesn't serve our kids well. It doesn't serve our kids well. And I have this philosophy that everyone, including students, need to be respected. I've talked to teachers where they say, "Well, it's us versus them." Talk about the teachers versus the students. And I checked the teachers. No, it's not a us versus them. They're human beings just like we are. They're just younger versions of us. And I give every one of my students the respect that they deserve as a human being. Now, I'm not going to respect you as a grown-up because you're not a grown-up yet, but you have a right to be respected as a human being, which means if you talk, I want to listen to you, which means if I'm talking, you have to listen to me. So I added that as a dynamic of the type of teacher I would be. And I end up having the principal bring state board people to my class to see how it goes. And like every time they come, you know how the money is what talks. And every time they bring in a group to look at the success of the programming, they will bring them to my classroom. And I wanted to say, this isn't how all the rest of the classes are. This is just how this class is. And they will show them how the kids are involved. And I will make them be involved because I will make it interesting for them. And the way that they have curriculums, especially now, it's to cater to how someone feels, And I tell the kids, just like I tell my own kids, how you feel is very, very important, but it has nothing to do with your learning process. If you want to talk about how you feel, we can do that on the side, but right now you need to learn. You need to learn. And so I'm not all up in your feelings. I'm not caring about your feelings. I'm caring about your learning. You need to learn. And then as you learn, if you want to talk, we can go to a counselor. We can talk about your feelings, but your feelings isn't the most important thing right now. You learning, you absorbing this information is, because you have to pay the price. Like everyone else, you have to go through these classes, pass a class, pass the test, and graduate just in order to go to the next step of life. And that's what we have to do. That's the processes we have. So that was my theory. That's my philosophy on teaching. And it worked. I believe it worked. Anyone that ever been taught or coached by me would tell you, Coach Cedric's classroom and Coach Cedric's softball team and basketball team, it was always quiet as a mouse. It was always quiet. Kids were always, and not that they were scared of me, but I respected them so much, they were afraid to disappoint me, which is what you should do as a parent, what we should do as a boss, what we should do as a teacher. We should make those who are sort of like our subordinates at the time, we should want them to see that I care about you so much that I'm doing this for you. And it's the truth. And that develops a relationship to where they want to reciprocate by showing you, I can do this. And every single one of my kids, when they turned 18, I had a girl call me up and she said, Coach Cedric, guess what? Guess what? And for some reason, at least, I heard it in her voice. I'm like, you're pregnant. And she says, how did you know? And I'm like, I don't know. I just had that feeling. And so she's like, are you disappointed in me? I'm like, why? Why would I be disappointed in you? You're about to embark upon motherhood, which is a beautiful thing. Now, are you saying that you're not going to be able to take care of this baby? Are you saying that? What? And she's like, no, my mom just told me to call you and tell you that I'm pregnant. And I'm like, okay, congratulations. And it shocked her, Elise, because I think she thought I was going to be like, you're 18 and you just had a baby. How are you going to, you know, and that's what we were tend to be taught by our parents and like to come down on situations. There's nothing I can do to change it. So the best thing I can do is encourage her to make the best of it. And now she has a 12-year-old daughter whom she's trying to beg me to come out of retirement and teach her softball. I'm like, it's not happening. It's not happening. So yeah, that's sort of me with teaching and the processes of it.
Writing. Did you just start writing one day, or did you attend seminars, writing classes to prep you, or what?
I guess it started out with people asking me, well, Cedric, is there another way I can say this? Can you rewrite this for me? And I would rewrite it, and they were like, that's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly, sort of like, I think of your mom kind of being like that, like being a clerk, how sometimes they know exactly what it is that a person is trying to say or do. And I started writing and started enjoying writing. Then I started writing poems, started writing sayings, and then I said, well, after, like I told you, after reading the Left Behind series, I'm like, I need to write something. And people always say, I want to write a book. I want to write a book. I want to write a book. I want to write something that addresses the African-American community, the Caucasian community, the Mexican community, everyone. Not just Rayford Steele and a rich Caucasian person, because some people can't relate to that. But like in my book, there were some people getting high in a garage, you know, and that's the reality of not all African-Americans, but my relatives who get high in a garage, who I know for a fact. So I address those things in with writing. And I think what made me want to write, excuse me, and got me into writing was, it's the best way to express yourself forever. What you say, unless it's recorded, can be lost. But what you write is forever, at least. It's going to always be there. So I think that's what got me into it.
Man, I hope videos and stuff will be there forever. We got the cloud now.
Yeah.
Not like the so-called moon landing, but that's neither
here. Oh yeah. Oh, that's a whole conversation.
That supposedly got deleted. Everything that's the moon landing is recording off someone's TV, but I won't go there. What are some positives and negatives? We could talk about the military. That's always a good one, right? And we could talk about being a teacher. I mean, you kind of talked about the teacher thing. You know, I love hearing stories of, you know, because I never had a teacher. I was like, yo, look, I want to call them up and tell them about what's going on in my life. So I believe that's a beautiful thing. And then the writing. So what are some of the positives and negatives of each?
Well, one of the things that I think are the positives for me are the negatives that happen in my life. For example, after that first relationship, I was the worst boyfriend in the world. I was off the chain. I was a good father, but I was a bad husband. Because I didn't trust anyone after that. And I have a saying that I didn't become a good man until I realized I hurt a good woman. And that changed me. It changed me. And that was a positive. That was a positive that, you know, how can I write about positive things if I'm constantly hurting people, people with my lifestyle and what I do. So I think that was one of the positives. Now, as far as the change, with me, the changes come with changes in my relationships, because they were everything that I've learned, Elise. And I don't know if this is a sad thing or not, have been taught by women. My dad was very, very quiet. My dad had one arm. I always thought fathers were supposed to have one arm because he was in the military and he put his hands in the equipment and it janked his arm off. And he was a pitcher in the profession. He was a pitcher in the Negro Leagues before he got drafted for the Korean War. So that killed his dreams. My dad was very, very quiet. He's probably sat down and talked to me maybe 15 times in my entire life. And my dad just recently passed away, like maybe 8 years ago. Everything that I've learned has come from women. My first wife taught me a lot. My sister, my mom, all of my mentors, my history mentors are women. And I learned a lot from that. The negatives are the, again, are when you change and you transition, you would like to think that your life as it is, including relationships, can transition with you. But there's some people that don't want to go there with you. There's some people, at least, that don't want to go from me being a teacher to writing about Christian things. And those people range from family members to friends to buddies. You know, they, for some reason, their expectation of you is not this person now that you're trying to be. So they're offended. They're, how dare you do this to me that you are now talking about the Bible? How dare you do this to me that now you're teaching and they don't pay enough? How dare you do this to me? So those are the negatives that comes from the transition from one career to the next career. And I know that it's not one of those tangible things that you can say it's negative, but it's a real thing and it's more relationship based. It's real. And I guess I don't need to tell you that because you have very many things that you've done, and you probably witnessed that, how sometimes you lose some people along the way. And sometimes it shocked me that not that who it's not doesn't shock me that I lose people. It shocked me who these people are, because some of them are the closest to you. And there's an old saying that you can only truly be hurt by somebody who's truly close to you. And I've been hurt a few times, especially about my career changes. And then the writing now, it's more with the writing comes research. And a good example is in my book, I talk about how in the Ten Commandments, God said, worship the Sabbath. And so Sabbath, that's on a Saturday. Why do we go to church on Sunday? And that's the type of person I am. I'm like, wait a minute, if God told us to go to church on Saturday, who changed it? And I have a Bible class and we debate all the time about those things when, you know, if we're going by the truth, if the truth is this, why are we doing this other thing? It's because we were taught. Traditionally, we were taught things. Well, this is the way things go. Not this is the truth. This is the way things go. And it become embedded in who we are. And when you come along with something different, you're viewed as you're going against what everybody else is doing. But actually, I'm just trying to promote the truth. So in my book, one of the things that I have, because I don't believe that people who are going to church on Sunday, because I believe you can go to church on Sunday. You can worship any day you want. But the Bible also says we're supposed to worship on Saturday. As long as it's Saturday, you think about God and you talk about creation, that's fine. And you can go to church on Sunday. So I'm not against going to church on Sunday. But in my book, and I'll tell you this, all the churches that worship on Sunday, when the rapture came, got destroyed with falling planes and cars and things. Not the people. Some of the people got raptured who were saved. So I didn't damn the people to hell that went to church on Sunday. I just destroyed the buildings. And some people take offense to that.
What are some traits that would make you successful, whether in the military, a writer, or as a teacher? Let me ask you this. Do you think that you developed these traits over time, or were they always there?
I believe the number one trait for any career is honesty. And I'll explain that to you. Like, my mom, whom I think is just a wonderful person, used to tell me things like, twin, don't go out with her because she ain't nothing but a blah, 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 blah. You don't want to get her pregnant, blah, 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 blah. Sex is of the devil, blah, 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 blah. And so she would just instill that, and not just me, but all of us. Until one day, at least, I did the math. I said, Mom, you had Petey when you was 13 years old. Like, it just, again, I'm the logical one. So whenever I talk to my daughters specifically about sex, I was always honest. I don't say, oh, I was the most perfect person in the world and I had abstinence. And no, I if you want to know, and most of the times they did not, I'll tell you the truth. This is how I am. It may not have been how things should have been, but this is how I am. And I think it gave them a respect for me to know that, hey, the same things that I probably go through, the same feelings I probably went through, my father had those as a young person too. I think fairness should always be the way that we project ourselves. Like, I'm not gonna I won't tell someone, you shouldn't do this. And I was the main transgressor of the very thing that you did. I can say, well, let me explain this. I did the same thing and this is what happened to me, and you don't want to go down that road. But I'm not going to be like, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. And I think that helps people with understanding that Cedric is he may not be a perfect person, but he tries to be fair. So I think the greatest quality you can have with anything is that you have to be honest and fair. Now, honest don't always mean right. Honest doesn't always mean that you're the person that they can look up to. But they'll know if they come to you, they'll get a version of what they want. It may be a negative version, it may be a positive version, but it may be one that they can relate to, which helps them. So I think that helps with teaching. I think that helps with, I told the kids, I'm letting you know right now, I skipped school all the time. I did not go to school, but I had to struggle afterwards. I don't say, y'all need to stay in school and y'all did this. And I tell them they need to stay in school by telling them I skipped school. And look, I had to go the hard route with getting to what you guys are getting easily. So, and then when I was ran programs and I hired people and I was their boss, I tried to be fair. Like, if they were late and if they explained to me, okay, I'm late because of whatever reason. I'm like, okay, was that it? Well, yeah. Well, are you not going to say anything? Well, no, because things happen. I'm like, well, now, if we were having this 15th conversation about the same thing 15 times, I know there's something up. But, I mean, life happens. And you have a life. You're a leader in your home. And there's some priorities. And I'm one of the type of employers that I understand that this shouldn't be your priority. Your family should be your priority, not this job. So that's how I will kind of, like, manage you. And at least, to be honest with you, I've never really had employees that had attendance problems, because if they know that you respect them as being a person, because you are a person, they view you as a person, and it's easy to work for someone that's just like yourself. It's hard to work for somebody who's untouchable. Oh no, he or she can't do any wrong. It's easy to work with someone who I can relate to. So I think that honesty is the most important thing you can have. And being fair is another.
You kind of touched on it a little bit, but tips and tricks you would give someone who wants to move from one career to another. And then, okay, what did you wish you knew before? Because, I mean, we keep harping on, you know, you're going to lose people. They're not going to agree with what you're trying to do. So tips and tricks and, you know, what did you wish you knew before?
The things I wish I knew before about switching over to the career or even being in this career is how rewarding it is. A book, at least, is like a baby. It's like, this comes from me. This is something that comes from me. And I'm You know how people don't ever get tired of their baby, their own kids' pictures, and they will show them all day, every day? That's how I am about people reading my books. Like I can hear it every single day. So, and every single hour, it's the reward that comes from it is so worth it. It's so worth it. And just some writing tips for anybody who wants to write. My tip for you is, it's called person, place, or thing. Every person, every place, and everything that you encounter, set aside. Writing isn't just writing a book. It's writing about the things that are in the book. You set another folder aside, and every person you talk, you mention, you write everything you write about that person. That way it's fluid. That way you can build on that person, or every place you go, it's fluid. Like if Johnny went to Mexico and Susie went to Mexico, whenever I talk about Mexico further in the book, I look and I see, well, Johnny and Susie's been there. So it's kind of helpful to have those side things. You don't just sit there and write a book. You have the site, person, place, and thing. And every time you put that in their folder, the person, place, and thing, this person, Wilhelmina, everything time I talk about Wilhelmina, it goes in their folder. So when I go to write about Wilhelmina, I go look in their folder and I read, okay, she did this, she did that, she's 6 feet tall, she's blah, blah, blah. And it helps with writing. All of those things are rewarding when the baby is delivered. When your book is published, all of those things help you feel a sense of importance, I guess. The transition, the thing that helped me with the transition from being a teacher to the author is, it was an easy transition because the characters that I write about, a lot of them have similarities from my students, from my basketball players, from my softball players, you know. In fact, I called up a few of them and said, can I use your name in the book? And I put their name in my book. And just a tip for anybody who wants to go into another career, just the first thing you should do is have a day where you do, you say, and you think nothing about the career change. Clear your mind. Some people take a vacation. Clear your mind. Don't even think about it, first of all. And then once your mind is clear, you took that day, then you start, the thoughts that start coming in on the pros and cons. It's, I believe you can answer this. The pros and cons happen if you're serious about changing the career. They happen almost autonomously. They happen, you'll start hearing them in your head like, well, maybe I shouldn't do that, or that would be good to do this, or maybe I shouldn't do that. Take note of all of those things, because those are gold nuggets in you making the right decision. Did that make sense, Elise? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm over here to drink my water and get my bourbon on. But yeah, no, it made perfect sense. One thing that I do is I do seminars like once a month, maybe if I feel like it, because I'm an introvert, so I'm not outside talking to a whole bunch of people. So this is my talking to people time, my Oprah time. And so when I do these seminars and things like that, I ask people for feedback and, you know, reviews and whatever. And so I keep a folder. I call it my brag bag. And so when I want to, you know, I'm feeling down or I want to brag or whatever, show somebody something, look, this is what somebody said about me. And so, you know, things like that. Yeah, you definitely got to keep a folder of whatever, whether it's about yourself, other people. Mm-hmm. My thing with other people is you got to have the blackmail folder. take your screenshots. Take your screenshots. So, yeah, that's my other people thing. I keep tabs on other people. But outside of that, where can we find you?
Okay. Well, before we say that, can I just tell you about the striking resemblance of you in my book?
Yeah, go
Is it
ahead.
okay? All right. The main character is Tracy Sitnor, who happens to be my real niece. She's married to a Mexican. She is very, very smart. She's into real estate. She walks, I'm sorry, she talks remarkably like you. If you can hear her, well, I created the character, so I hear her talking. She acts remarkably like you because there is a sense of you call it's an you're introvert, but it's a sense of confidence with the being introverted. You put off to me that you're very, very confident in whom you are, who you are. You're just confident with it. And you've done so many things like Tracy in the book that you're confident, but she'll sit back. She'll sit back until somebody say something and then she'll let them have it. She'll tell them. And when you first start talking and you start telling some of the things, and then when I start doing some research on you, I'm like, this is almost Tracy in the book. It's kind of eerie because the personality in itself, because you're the way you are right now is how you are in your, you don't change. It's how you are in your interviews. It's how you are when you interview other people. You are just you. And sometimes people dance for situations and they dance for different people. They dance for different like walks of life. I can see you acting like this in a room full of sailors, in a room full of doctors, in a room full of mothers, in a room full of teenagers. You and Tracy are going to be who you are right there. And that's a form of honesty. And that's what I wanted to paint for Tracy, that although she got left behind, she's a very, very honest person with whom she is. And you guys kind of like, your fashion is sort of the same too. And Tracy likes a lot of fine things. She likes a lot of, in the book, she does. So it was just kind of, to me, kind of either faithful or creepy that I was getting an interview by Tracy in my book. That's what I was in my mind. I was saying, this is like the character interviewing me. So it's one of the things I'm going to thank God for after this podcast. After this,
I didn't get raptured.
You end up getting raptured. Trust me, you end up getting raptured.
Damn, I gotta stay and watch all the bad stuff happen. Nah, you know what? I would want to stay. I would want to stay and watch all the stuff happen, honestly. But you know, mm-hmm. It's just me.
Yeah.
But yeah. For the record, I am not married to a Mexican. That's why I call him Mexican.
So. Well, because you went to Mexico. That's yeah,
I'm
the
not,
that's
I'm
the,
not married to a Mexican. So for the record, let's throw that out there. But other than that, show us where, or tell us where we can find you.
You can find me on, first of all, Facebook. I'm under Cedric Sitnor. I have a Twitter. It's C. Arthur Sitnor. It's under my pen name. And I think that's it. I gave you the link for the book if they are interested in the book. I think that's it.
All right, y'all. My name is Elise Robinson, aka Tracy, in the book. And thank you for listening to Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. And thank you, Cedric, for coming on the show. And until next time.